Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
That's an intro.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got a lot more viewers. Welcome.
I hope they're not viewing this.
Why?
That would be inappropriate.
Oh.
Listeners.
Listeners. I always forget.
So, yes. Listeners, thanks for listening. You can email us at shadowcrime@gmail.com.
Yep.
Whatever you want. We're not picky about emails. Send it on over. And we are just going to jump right into your story. And you're covering international.
Yes, I am covering international.
I'm excited.
And we joked last time how we would have a hard time pronouncing things, but
I was supposed to
picked a Brazilian story.
Oh, so. You cheated.
But honestly, some of the names I was like, what in the heck? Like, I don't know how to pronounce that. So we'll see. But so,
to clarify, in case you're new, she is from Brazil.
Yes,
so.
Yes, I'm from Brazil. Okay, so this story is about a man named Wallace Souza, which Wallace is a very non-Brazilian name. So
very,
I was
like, kind of a Bubba name, right?
Yeah, it's just interesting. I was Wallace. Just like, huh, okay. But anyways, this story, I literally just got everything from this one article on The Time. It's a UK, like, article place, whatever it's called. News place, and it was written by Ben Mitchell, and he did a great job. So I literally copied it, other than there are some words that he very eloquently used, but I did not know what they meant. So I got like the dumbed version of those words. So yeah, but anyways, all right. So it's September 2008, and it's midnight in Manaus, a large city on the Amazon in northern Brazil. A young man, which, by the way, I don't know northern Brazil. I'm from, like, mid-Brazil, okay. So I know of, like, I don't know, just,
Brazil's
like, stereotypes kind of things, but I don't think I've ever been, and I don't remember. So, a young man named Henrique da Silva Ribeiro pulls into a dimly lit patrol station.
Okay, so rural or city?
A large city, it says.
Okay. Sorry,
Manaus is a really big city. It's
okay.
Probably less than Rio, I believe, but it's still a big city.
Got it.
So this guy, Ribeiro, pulls into a petrol station, to check his overheating car engine. He gets out, sticks his head under the bonnet, and starts to investigate. The street is quiet, the air is warm and still, and insects chirrup away in the background. Suddenly, another car, a black pickup, pulls into the garage. A man emerges from inside and strides purposely towards Ribeiro. He draws a pistol, shoots him at least 4 times from point-blank range, and immediately drives away from the scene.
What?
Yep. But then just a few minutes later, another car arrives at the garage. Out pour a television crew who begin to record everything.
Whoa. So that's like they knew.
Mm-hmm. They were there very quick.
Wow.
A male reporter speaks into a large microphone and describes the scene. He points to Ribeiro's vehicle, then leads the crew to the dead man. The cameraman zooms in on the body, and we see he is flat on his back.
Oh, no.
Arms outstretched, dark pools of blood forming beneath his head and spreading out from under his torso.
Did they call someone or they're just filming this?
They're just filming it.
Oh, okay.
Lifeless eyes gaze up at the night sky. Nothing is pixelated. It's shocking. It's gory. It's raw. It was also incredibly popular TV. The crew worked for a program called Canal Livre, which translated is Free Channel. I don't know if that means anything, but at the time was the top rated show in Amazonas, the largest state in Brazil, and one which, if it were a country, would be the 16th largest in the world.
Wow.
Canal Livre was like nothing you had ever seen. It was broadcast daily at lunchtime, and it featured teams of roving crews reporting on violent crimes in Manaus, the city. The footage of the murdered Ribeiro was, by the standards of the show, tame. Like, that was tame.
So this reminds me kind of like Night Stalker vibes, where they're just always there,
yes,
and they don't care what they're putting.
No, and it's literally like the goriest things. Mm-hmm. Like, they just have no filter. It's just they put it all out there.
No sensitivity.
And it's working because people are watching.
Oh, people love that stuff.
Yep. So, yeah, it was very tame. When someone was gunned down inside their car in broad daylight, Canal Livre would be the first TV crew at the scene, poking their cameras into the car so that everyone could see the victim slumped back and bloody. When a bound and burnt body was found in a nearby jungle, Canal Livre got there so quickly that the corpse was still smoldering when they found it. There was a cameraman that said, quote, "It smells like barbecue," like nonchalantly.
Oh, no.
But like,
that's
they're
so
all,
disrespectful.
They're all saying it, though, as if it's just kind of like, yeah, like just very normal.
Wow.
So another cameraman says, yes, my friend, it's here. Look, here's the body. He continues, pointing at the blackened human remains as though they were an object of moderate interest on a nature trail. After a messy favela murder, which favela is like, have you ever seen a picture of Brazil where it's like a whole bunch of houses like stacked on a hill and it's like all very poor? Like,
no.
Interesting. I'll show it to you later. But anyways, there's lots of hills and hills in poor places in Brazil where it's just like house built on top of house, like on a hill.
I feel like I've mostly seen like city areas.
Oh, yeah. Like, so this is like very poor area. And obviously with those areas come a lot of crime. So after a messy, but favela is the name used for that general like type of area.
Okay.
So after a messy favela murder, a member of the victim's family sobs into a Canal Livre microphone while the whole thing is caught on camera. The intimacy of it all somehow impossible to turn away from. But it was not just this footage that drew audiences. It was the man at the heart of Canal Livre. The entire operation was the brainchild of the presenter, Wallace Souza. He was a former police officer turned reporter who had launched the program in 1989 as a drug-related violence began to increase in Manaus. He was heavy set, charismatic man approaching middle age. Souza presided over a show that mixed bloody reportage with elements that could not be more out of place.
I feel like that's so rare.
What,
to see
show?
Somebody in police work that moves over.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of times people in that line of work hate media and like.
Yes, but he was very much passionate about like. Because in Brazil, there's obviously a lot of corruption, a lot of that kind of stuff. So I would understand somebody if he genuinely was very passionate about like making the city better and like bringing awareness to things. Like a lot of cops and like they're not going to care about that. Like it's all corrupted. So I would understand if
kind
he's really
like
trying
a,
to make
like
a difference.
Like a call to action. Like here's what's happening.
Exactly. Yeah.
That and he's probably because of his background in police work, very numb to those things.
Yes.
Which helps you capture it more
because you don't care.
Like if you were out there, you'd be like, oh my gosh, you wouldn't be able to bring yourself to like.
Which I feel like you can kind of think of in two aspects, whether like. A, it could be like where it's they're so desensitized and it's very messed up that they're just showing everything. But also B, like him wanting to show, hey, this is the true facts of what's happening in our city. Like this is what's happening.
Yeah, I think that there's a way to have an honest interpretation of what's happening while being respectful to victims and their families. And I think that from some of the things you've said, that definitely that line was crossed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I feel like there's times that things need to be more talked about, but I think you have to always keep that in mind.
Yeah.
The family and the victims, it's not like a prop that
it's
you're
just
kind of...
It's not just a show.
Yeah.
And I can see somebody like Wallace being very passionate about something in the beginning and then getting so far deep into it that it's like you don't even remember how you got there kind of thing.
Well, it's like a dime a dozen. Like everything's kind of the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, his show had all of this like crime stuff. That was the main thing, but it was also... a show of also like a whole bunch of other stuff. Like there'd be dancing girls, pop singers performing their songs. There was a live studio audience containing adoring grandmothers and young children. There was even a wisecracking puppet, which you would think is weird, but it's actually very, very common in Brazil. For some reason, I don't know why. And Jan's started like noticing some of these things because it just like plays at my parents' house and he's like, I'm so confused, what kind of show is this? But like they take one host, imagine like James Corden, imagine him, like his show, but like in his show he had like in his show he literally has like American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, like what he already does, which is just bring celebrities on. Like it's so many different things happening in one thing.
It's just a weird contrast between that and like murder.
Yes,
like,
I agree, but it's not so crazy for the Brazilian audience to see multiple different things all in the same thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's weird.
Get it. I'm like in the Starbucks line listening to a true crime. Like I understand.
Yeah, it's also something where like when it comes to like TV shows, that's like. Like crime TV shows or celebrity TV shows or things like that. Brazil does not do a good job about being like unique and doing their own thing. They just steal everything from the US, which a lot of other countries do as well. I get it. But they don't have any original ideas. And so all their ideas that they're stealing from the US, they're putting all in one show. But it's multiple different hosts are doing this in their own show. It's strange. It's a strange concept. But yeah, this is all happening. It says it was essentially a madcap variety show intercut with brutal murders, which is just weird.
It's jarring.
Yep.
I feel like there could be a whole like mockumentary on that.
Yeah.
Like honestly, that kind of show.
Yeah, literally. Which a lot of them are not that like intense with murders, but the concept is very
familiar. But I mean, if you look at shows like The Office or whatever, like the mundane and then like the random things that happen. I would totally watch that show.
I agree. So there was an investigative journalist working in Manaus, and she said, quote, every crime reporter knew the show because they always got the scoop. The fact that they were the first on the scene and filmed bodies on the ground, the family crying over a body, the neighbors all stunned, that definitely increased his ratings, end quote. And at the center always was Sozo, who would rail against the growing violent crime in his city, attacking the drug traffickers who caused it and the politicians who did nothing to help ordinary people caught up in the killings. He would address the camera directly. He would appear part televangelist, part game show host, which is so weird. Like,
I mean, are they that different?
But you can kind of envision what kind of guy this guy was. But because Sosa and the Canal Livre reporting teams were, in the eyes of many viewers, doing more than anyone to hold criminals accountable for their actions, many began to view him as a crusader, particularly when he would arrive at fresh crime scenes himself.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that weird mix of, if you really look at him, it's kind of weird how desensitized he is and how passionate and zoned in it he is. But he seems to be kind of charismatic as well, where people just kind of are captivated by what he's doing.
And they think he's fooling them into thinking this man's really cares for our city.
Well, and yeah, he's playing on their fear of look at what they're letting happen. He's totally that kind of like icon where they can look at it and kind of ignore the red flag.
Exactly.
Red signs, as you said last episode.
There was a former Canal Livre cameraman called José Nilsson, which is a very interesting name. And he said, quote, the street gang started to fear him. The gangs would leave when he got there and people would clap when they saw him. They really liked him, end quote. Citizens of Manaus who had just witnessed a violent crime would often call Canal Livre, who would arrive in minutes before they called the police. Which is funny, like people watching things happen would call Canal Livre before they even called the cops, which is why they would often get there before cops did.
Okay.
It became just like a phenomenon of like, everybody wants to watch this. Like, it's almost like, it sounds silly, but almost comparing it to like, you know, when people fight and everyone's like world star, like it's like people are trying to like film it for this thing.
Yeah. Instead of like actually trying to help. Also, if they feel like he's actually trying to help and the cops aren't, maybe.
Yeah.
There might be some like sincere motives there.
But it's not like they're really helping once they come to the scene. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like the cameramen are actually doing
right,
something.
Right. But giving it a voice of like, hey, here's what's happening. I think there's probably a mix of people. I mean, there's people that film things that you're like, why are you filming this? Like, help. But
But the police eventually got super annoyed. And so anytime like crimes would happen in the city, like they would take hours to show up because they knew that when they showed up, Canal Livre would be there and it would be all about them and they would have all their cameramen they literally wouldn't have like they would just get frustrated and so they wouldn't show up until hours
kind
later.
That's kind of passive aggressive for like
not surprised
police.
Again, it's police like, in fine. Brazil it's like are kids like very
fine
corrupt.
I won't even show up.
Sosa would always tip off the police in any case so they could make sure that suspects could be tracked down. Sosa called out and dressed down known drug dealers by name on his show, is very like, that's kind of ballsy to like call out specific drug dealers by their name. And he and Canal Livre would embed with the police as they went on patrol. One clip from the show sees Sosa interrogating a recently arrested gang member, berating him, saying, "I remember a crime you committed," he says, looming over the shirtless criminal. "You murdered a citizen in front of a child." The subject of Sosa squirms on camera and says, "I don't want to kill anyone else. I promise to God that I will never kill again." It was just weird. It's almost like that interaction with them, like it almost looked a little bit staged, but then it was like, what is happening? Like he's just having this conversation with the criminal and he's like, "I promise I won't do it again."
So
just weird.
What it reminds me of, this may not make sense, but did you ever watch Dog the Bounty Hunter?
No.
So he would like pick people up. He's literally taking them to prison and he stands outside, gives them a cigarette and prays with them and gives them a whole pep talk and then is like, go to prison now. Like, it's just a weird thing to do. Like,
it is weird. It's just a strange interaction.
Arrest them and like, you don't need to, I don't know. It's very just weird. Funny to me.
I agree. There was another, she worked as a director for Canal Livre at one point. Her name is Vanessa Lima. And she said, quote, he started to become a defender of the people. He became a hero in people's eyes, end quote. Sosa capitalized on this. And in 2000, he was elected to the state legislative assembly as a congressman by the highest ever recorded margin. As well as continuing to present Canal Livre, Sosa began publicly to attack leading political figures within the state government for their incompetence in dealing with the crimes. As Sosa won re-election after re-election, it was clear that he was gearing up for a tilt at higher office, specifically Secretary of Security, which would place him in control of all law enforcement in Amazonia, the state.
Wow.
A lot of power.
Yeah.
But then in 2008, a routine police raid changed everything. Acting on a tip-off, a squad of officers swooped on the home of a drug dealer, Moacy Jorge da Costa. Why are people's names so long? Gosh. I get it. Anyways, a brawny suspected killer known on the street as Moa. When Moa was arrested, he seemed under the impression that an unnamed powerful benefactor would simply get him out of trouble. So he was pretty confident, like, I'm being arrested, but there's someone that's taking care of me kind of thing.
Right.
But when it became clear that he was on his own, he began to panic. So he started talking. And what he said seemed like the ramblings of someone who had lost touch with reality.
Hmm.
This detective named Givanusso, Cavalcanti is what I'll refer to him as. That's his last name. He said, quote, when I read Moa's statement, at first it seemed like fantasy. Everything he said was unbelievable. At one point in his testimony, he said that a meeting took place at the home of a criminal boss who told him to go out into the city of Manaus and commit crimes, robberies, homicides, end quote. So they were kind of like, what? Like, to them, they have no idea, like, who could be doing that. Like, this man just seems like he's on drugs and doesn't know what he's talking about. And who did Moa name as the leader of this criminal group?
Our Night Stalker.
The man ordering teams of killers out onto the streets, none other than Wallace Sosa. Mm-hmm. The man who had spent almost 20 years presenting himself as the whip of organized crime in his home city. Cavalcanti said, quote, in reality, Canal Livre was a massive smokescreen. They had the information that got them to the scene first, precisely because they had committed the crimes themselves.
Wow.
Every day they were obsessed with increasing their ratings. And to capture the audience, there's nothing better than showing the crimes firsthand. It's surreal, he says, frowning. Murder for TV ratings.
I would totally watch that movie. I mean, I already did because I watched Night Stalker, but I would totally watch this version of that.
So there is a Netflix show on it. It's in Portuguese, but okay, you obviously care. Can use captions. Yeah. It's called Killer Ratings. It came out in 2019, I think.
I haven't watched it yet,
okay. But we want to watch it.
That is so cool. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. It's not cool what he actually did, but
while I was researching this, like, so many stuff was coming up and I was like, what is this? And I was like, oh shoot, it's a
Netflix feel like
show.
That's something they would do on like Criminal Minds or something. Yeah. That's totally like a plot.
Wow. So Sosa denied everything. He fought for his political life, claiming he was the victim of a conspiracy cooked up by his political enemies to discredit him. But an investigation led by Cavalcanti produced enough evidence first to see Sosa impeached, which stripped him out of legislative immunity and then presented him with charges, including the murder of 5 drug dealers and criminals, of drug trafficking, and of the formation of a criminal gang. But he never stood trial. In July 2010, Sosa suffered a fatal heart attack. He was 51.
That's young.
Yeah, very young. Got to him.
So it's weird to me, though. Like, you go from police work to fronting as someone who wants to fix the broken system, but it's causing more harm.
You just wanted attention.
I wonder if something like bruised his ego in his police work.
Maybe. So, story's not over yet. He did die.
Ooh,
but
he died, so I definitely thought that was over.
No, I got more. We're about halfway. So there's more information. There's more, like, information and, like stuff done after he died to find out if he actually did do these things.
Okay.
And a lot of it is also, there are a lot of answers on, like, the Netflix show, too. It's kind of documentary-ish. So, yeah. I'll skip that because I already talked about that. So when, the maker of the show, his name is Daniel Bogado. And when he arrived in Manaus in January of 2017 to begin researching the project, he says he imagined Sosa would be some kind of disgraced figure. universally just hated. But he said, but when you start talking to people, you realize that actually, no, there are two completely different stories about this man. Mm. He says one is that he was killing people for ratings and that everybody knew it. And the other is that he was this principled, brave, and kind man who was destroyed in the most horrible way by his political opponents. So you have two completely different, like the country was divided in, I mean, pretty similar to like what we talked about with O.J. Simpson's case. Like it was either you believed him or you didn't.
Right.
What Bogardo discovered was that the story was more complex than anyone had imagined. He said, if this was a novel, you would think it was just way over the top. Just reminds me of like a soap opera.
Yeah.
One of the first things that Bogado explains is that if we want to understand the enduring scandal of Sousa and Canal Livre, we must first understand Manaus. He said, the story of Wallace, the story of this man and the things that happened is the story of how a city changed, how it became basically hell. So Manaus has a population of 2 million and it's surrounded by jungle carved out of the Amazon rainforest and reached principally by air or river. 40 years ago, he says, 40 years ago, it was a peaceful place. But then because of wider changes in drug trafficking and things that were happening in Colombia and Mexico, and also because of new types of coca leaves being planted near Manaus, it became much more important as a transit point for drugs. Hmm. Throughout the 90s, violence escalated as highly professional drug trafficking organizations displaced loosely organized street gangs. So it was just kind of a mess of like a center point kind of thing. Today, Manaus is listed among the most violent cities in the world. This is crazy. London has a murder rate of 1.4 homicides per 100,000 people. For Manaus, that figure shoots up to 48 homicides per 100,000 people. That's so bad. Yeah. 2 weeks after Bogado arrives in the city, a massacre took place in the Anicio Jobim It's a jail. What is it? How do you say it? I can't say it.
Penitentiary?
Yes. There's so many T's in there.
I couldn't like.
Sadly, 56 prisoners were murdered by inmates as part of a drug gang related reprisal. There were decapitations, men burnt alive. It was, Bogado says it was apocalyptic. So it was really bad. So if Canal Livre seemed violent, it was only because it was reporting on an increasingly violent city. That is, of course, if you ignore the fact that Sousa may have been ordering the likes of Moa to commit violence, assassinating drug dealers and taking their patch, boosting his ratings and power as a trafficker in one fell swoop. So, like, obviously they're already in a dangerous city, but it's like, how much did this man, like, add to that?
It's also just, how is he every time on top of it if he didn't have
there is the reasoning of people would call them directly.
Yeah.
And they had like cars everywhere, just like in the center of the city.
Yeah.
So one of the main reasons people began to suspect Canal Livre was the sheer speed at which they were able to arrive at the scene of some murders. In one notorious piece of Canal Livre footage, the camera crew arrived before the victim even died. It's pretty intense. Bogado says that became one of the big stories, proving to people that Canal Livre must have been behind it. As part of his research, Bogado tracked down this footage. He says, quote, it's a guy lying on the ground in agony, drenched in blood, moving one way or another, and then he just dies right in front of the camera. I was completely shocked of how gruesome it was. But Bogado continues, the speed of these camera crews doesn't prove anything. Hmm. People called Canal Livre because they were trusted and they always had crews roaming on the streets. There's a logic to it. It wasn't implausible for them to get to the scene before the police. And sometimes police did get there first. But most of the times they didn't. With the murder of Hobedo, which was the first guy at the garage with the car, the explanation of how they managed to get to the garage so quickly was that a TV crew had been filming a nearby burst water pipe, which is a logical explanation. Only then, Bogado spoke to a friend of Hobedo's who said that Hobedo, in the days preceding his murder, had been saying that he was afraid Sousa was going to kill him. That's a little sketch.
So was it there ever a situation where they were caught at certain scenes and there was ones they missed because they were, you know, things happening simultaneously? Oh, like
multiple things happening?
And it's like...
Well, they had multiple crews.
Right, but, I mean, you have a limit to that.
Yeah, I'm sure. From what I read is they had like over like a dozen or more crews in the city. So I don't know how much crime is happening like per hour or like per day, but they caught most of it. Like that was their goal almost. It's what they like tried to achieve.
Yeah, of course.
Bogado also says, quote, and then you think, could this person be lying or being paid to say these things? The more information Bogado uncovered, the murkier the story became. What was clear, though, was that Souza never hid his contempt for criminals. He lost a favorite brother to an overdose, and a staple device of his rhetoric was that traffickers deserved nothing less than death. So he was very just like out there about all this stuff. Mm. There was a broadcast that he was part of. Not the detective. There was a broadcast he was part of, and he said, quote, there's only one way to stop drug dealers. Bullets, bullets, and the grave.
Wow.
That's all they deserve. So he was very passionate about it. So if he had been ordering dealers and traffickers be murdered for his show, then in a funny way, it wouldn't be totally inconsistent with Souza's views.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be like that crazy to think of. Bogado says, quote, you know, Rio is full of people who are the big guy in the favela and everybody considers them a hero. And they may be running death squads to get rid of undesirables. It's not unusual. They begin as 10% good guys, but they start selling drugs to fund their operations. And they say it's all for the greater good. So he's thinking like he did have the right intentions, but then it just got to a place where it was like he liked the attention, he liked the views and the ratings. And
yeah, I could totally see it being a combination of things.
Yes, like I agree.
He maybe had a good side and had good intentions in some aspects in the beginning and then kind of got carried away. I mean, I think even just the way they did it shows how carried away he got. Exactly. So minimum, he was disrespectful.
Yep. Bogado does not question Souza's desire to help people. In 2005, one episode of the show sees a criminal take a young family hostage and insist that he will only negotiate with Representative Souza. So Souza walks into the house and tells the gunman to take him hostage instead. The family is released, and although the criminal makes a getaway, nobody is harmed, thanks to the intervention of the TV presenter, an episode all captured on camera. And everyone was saying, like, this happened multiple times. And everybody was like, oh, the kidnaps really boosted his image. Because it was like he was putting himself on the line. But then I think they could be real, but they also could be fake. Like, he could be paying these people to do that. He could be paying these criminals to hold people hostage.
I don't know a ton about hostage situations. I haven't heard of many times that it's like, we'll swap out and that's fine.
That's what I'm saying. It's weird.
I feel like that's very convenient that he just let them go and...
Exactly.
And then got away? I don't know.
Exactly. So, weird. Bogado says he has spoken to enough people in Manaus to know that he genuinely cared about ordinary people. Undertaking acts of kindness away from the camera, he says, I think it was a genuine part of his personality. On top of that, was he also a criminal mastermind? So, it was like he would do good things for people and, like, donate money and, like, do things
I
like
think
that. But then he would maybe
forget.
Be murdering people behind the
scenes. Well, people can be messy and they're not, it's not linear. So, they might have good attributes and then they might have really negative ones.
Yeah.
And especially, I think it's very hard with charismatic people because they can be likable. They can do nice things. They can do all these things. But it's a means to an end of, one, a lot of times people's motives for doing nice things is so they look good.
Yeah, exactly.
So, people like them.
Exactly.
To attention, like all of those things still filter into him potentially
being just into himself,
potentially puppeting this where he gets to, you know, do what he wants and he's controlling people.
Exactly. Yet Souza's claim that he was the victim of a conspiracy to destroy him is not impossible. He made enemies. Not only did he name individual drug dealers on his TV show, but he stood up in Congress and singled out drug trafficking organizations such as the Familia do Norte, which translates to the Family of the North, or FDN for short, and demanded to know why state authorities were so unable or unwilling to do anything to halt their speed. So he definitely like would put people on the spot, like by name would like call out people that were corrupt or like people that were helping these drug gangs and all that
stuff. I
think
there's a case to be made for potentially
them
just not liking him and kind of painting this picture of
him. Yeah, it's like definitely possible.
Because he was interfering so much, just kind of trying to get rid of him by saying that he was setting all of this up.
Exactly. He launched an investigation into the mayor of another city in Amazonia who he believed was embezzling oil money. Not only was this proof true, but it was discovered that the mayor in question was also a prolific pedophile who preyed upon the young girls of his town. So Souza again was like the hero and found that out and got him like, you know? So it was like multiple little things like that people like liked him for.
Yeah, of course.
And they weren't looking at other stuff. Sosa took to riding in a bulletproof car one day and said, quote, "I think I am one of the most threatened men in the state." He tells the camera, "When I go home, I ask God to allow me to go to work and come back alive," end quote. Mm. I think there was a big, like a little bit of a cockiness in that, though. It's like, look at me, I'm so big and bad.
Yeah.
And he would put himself in situations that were like, you know, dangerous, but like most situations you put yourself in Brazil are dangerous.
Well, I mean, you're calling out gang leaders.
Yes,
you're exactly. You're going to definitely be a target. So.
Yeah, but I'm sure he had like bodyguards and people like surrounding him at all times.
Yeah.
But nobody had Sosa in their sights more firmly than Detective Givanusso Cavalcanti, who since the confession of Moa had led the investigation into the congressman. Time and again, it seemed as though Sosa was on the verge of finally being exposed for the criminal mastermind Cavalcanti believed him to be. So Sosa denied knowing who Moa was, only for anonymous packages to arrive at local newspapers containing copies of a photograph of the two men, Sosa and Moa, sitting next to each other in a swimming pool.
Yikes.
Sosa says that he did not know his name was Moa and that he was just some guy who would come to his family home to train his teenage son, Rafael, in jiu-jitsu.
Hmm.
Moa, who had since changed his confession, saying that he had, in fact, never met Wallace before, could not explain how the photograph had come to be. It's almost like a, like, come up with an excuse. Don't just be like, oh, no. Like,
how do you not know that a picture is out there of you and someone?
Yeah, so stupid. So the police targeted Rafael, a plump, rich kid who appeared to enjoy posing as a tough guy. By saying they were going after Rafael, they were able to secure a warrant to search the comfortable home he shared with his father. Footage shows Cavalcanti and his task force officers with submachine guns and balaclavas, which I researched are like kind of like the ski masks.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where that word came from.
I don't know where that word comes from.
So they're searching Rafael's car where they find 380 pistol magazines. They searching the Sosa family home, they uncover tens of thousands of pounds in cash, as well as lists of weapons and pieces of paper containing names of drug dealers. Ooh. Rafael is arrested. Sosa, who was present during the search, seemed physically crushed, according to one officer present. The investigations continued. Sosa, despite his popularity with voters, was facing the possibility of impeachment, which would allow him to be prosecuted as a regular citizen,
mm-hmm.
which would mean jail. Which in turn, right. given the number of criminals he had helped put away, would almost certainly mean death. Like, if I'm him, I'd rather just die before going to jail because he knows he does not have, like, he has people waiting for him in jail, like,
yeah.
ready to attack. But for every claim, there was a potentially believable explanation. Bogada says, "One moment you're on his side because of the way events are turning, and then you just turn against him because other things have been uncovered."
Yeah.
It's this back and forth. Finally, in October 2009, despite a rousing speech in Congress, Sosa was impeached. After a few days held holed up in his ex-wife's house, he gave himself up, mm-hmm. though still maintaining his innocence. The footage of Sosa sitting alone, head in his hands, after the vote to impeach him could not have been more careless. He seemed like he just didn't want to be there. Bogada says this is a man who clearly wanted to be loved. Then suddenly the scandal happens and he becomes this global laughingstock, the supervillain. Bogado is still unable to say what the exact truth of the whole case is.
Yeah.
He says, "If you have somebody killing for ratings, it sounds crazy. But for Wallace to be right, for this to be a conspiracy against him, it would have to have been a conspiracy involving the police, the federal police, all the judges, including federal judges on multiple cases. The whole political apparatus would have to have joined against him." Which also sounds quite far-fetched because he said, "I've met these people, and while there is corruption, it's very difficult to believe there is 100% corruption." So, like, he clearly was very high up in multiple different areas. So he's saying, like, for there really to have been something against him, it would have had to been to, over 200 yeah. people, like,
well,
all
I
planning against
him. Well, I do
think,
at least in the U.S., the situations of corruption we see, a lot of times it's just oversight. So
yeah.
it's like... certain people are corrupt and other people over them higher up and different branches, whatever, mm-hmm. just kind of either trust that or don't really look
That's
into
true.
It or don't follow up. And so it's not necessarily, I think there can be negligence without like knowingly being corrupt.
Yeah.
If that
yeah,
makes
yeah.
sense. Yeah, so I definitely think it can happen. It's just kind of a domino effect.
I think he kind of had the stance of like, everybody is against me. Like they're all doing this against me.
No. And I definitely don't think that that's the case. Yeah. I think it's probably.
He actually did do it.
Just like how the person investigating this feels like it's kind of split.
Yeah, exactly. So Souza died of a heart attack in the hospital. Chronic liver disease had finally caught up with him. To his supporters in Manaus, the persecution of Souza undoubtedly helped accelerate his failing health. Yeah. During his final days, mysterious billboard-sized photographs of a frail and dying Souza began appearing around Manaus, accompanied by the words, quote, "How much is a life worth?" End quote. Like, that's so extra. Who did that? Like, who? That's so, yeah. The irony is that the fall of Souza may have cost Manaus more lives than anyone could have ever predicted. The trafficking gangs that he had been so vocal in demanding the state crush, the Family of the North, and so on, have since become more powerful than ever.
Yeah.
The last man to perhaps know the full truth of the story was Moa, but he was burnt alive in the prison massacre shortly after Bogado's arrival in the city. Which was the whole, that was like the family's show of power, like after he died.
Wow.
Perhaps Souza wouldn't have been able to make a difference, but it's hard to imagine he would have done nothing. In an interview given a year before his impeachment and death, a debonair Souza sits behind a desk and explains himself to a French TV crew. He says, "Here in Manaus, we had an issue with gangs. These gangs are responsible for most murders. A family man would get off at a night bus and be killed for a cigarette. Manaus was cursed by this violence. I said, I'll see if I can make it a TV show to combat this." He says, looking levelly at the camera, "and I started a crime show. So... Wow. I feel like the person who wrote, like, Bogado the investigator, I feel like was very much, like, split. Like, he didn't know if it was real or not. Sometimes I feel like he's so, like passionate about him being this, like, very bad guy. But then sometimes he, like, almost has a soft spot for him, which is interesting because my take is completely that this man is, like, horrible and he did everything.
I do think, though, when you're – he went there. So you're sitting down and you're talking to someone from one side of it.
Yeah.
And you're kind of writing from that perspective. And then you sit down and talk to someone from the other side of it.
True.
And it's probably very hard to distinguish, like, take out all the emotion from it and, like, biases, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, here's, like, the actual tangible facts of this.
Yeah,
and here's,
I get that.
Because you're just, a lot of it is, like, oh, well, he did this and people don't know this. And, mm-hmm. and you're kind of having to weed out the... So I think it's easier from our standpoint to kind of be like, nah, he...
Yeah, I get that. I would think, though, that somebody who actually, like, lived it out... and I actually want to ask my parents if they know about this story.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see if they did because I know, obviously, it happened in the 2000s, which we already hear, but I'm sure they heard about it. But anyways, It was a little bit more shocking to me, though, because I would think that if there were investigators that were currently living in Brazil and experiencing it would have those mixed thoughts. But I would think somebody coming in would already be so like, this is insane. Like, this man's crazy. But I get that. Like, if you are,
I think
somebody
because
who,
I mean, the way that I see it is it's insane either way. It's insane if he was framed by the police, and it's insane if he was doing all this on purpose.
Yeah, I get that.
So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, which... Either way, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that he was probably a little bit of both. Like, it probably was a situation where there's a little bit of truth to each side, and mm-hmm. there's probably a lot that we don't know still. But I think there's enough to prove where each side feels valid in their perspective.
Yeah. I get that. But
very interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to start watching the show and see how it is. Also, it'll be good for Jan so he can learn more Portuguese.
Before you guys go there.
Before we go. And then when we go to Brazil, I'll start asking everybody in Brazil
about
what
they
think.
Oh my gosh, live investigation right there.
Well, because a lot of them obviously were living there at the time.
You have to record it.
The people's reactions?
Yeah.
It'll be very interesting.
Very interesting. Good story.
Thanks.
Let us know if you have any other stories. shadowcrime@gmail.com. And we are going to hear now from Jan and Steven their information.
All right, Jan, what you got for us today?
I got some cool stuff.
All right, let's hear it.
So you guys talked about Manaus, which is where all this, happened. And and you said, oh, maybe it's like close to Rio in size or whatever. Manaus is 2 million people. Rio is close to 7.
Wow, interesting.
Which is not that big compared to, that's kind of like what Miami is.
Oh, wow. Holy cow. That's crazy.
That Miami really is weird.
If I'm not mistaken, it's like a couple million people in the greater Miami area, obviously. Moving forward, I have a picture of a favela. I can show you real quick.
What that was trying to explain to you, Ash. It's just a mess.
It's like
nonstop. Whoa.
Yeah, it's just like literally houses on houses on houses. And they're just very poor.
They have these all over South America.
So that looks similar to, it was more of an incline, but similar to Haiti.
Yes, that is on an incline. It's on a hill.
Yeah, but Haiti was more of an incline, but that's exactly what it looks like.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. So that's what favelas are. I remember I can speak to favelas in Venezuela. They're not called that. They're just called, actually, I don't remember what they're called in Venezuela. My family's Venezuelan. I remember one time we were driving, and I go to my uncle, oh, that's a cool waterfall. And he's like, that's not a waterfall. I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, that's sewage. And it was sewage from the, like, from the ghettos. They're nice. The ghettos.
Yeah, literally, it's translated to.
And they're all built with, like, plywood and particle board and sheets of aluminum.
So, like our apartment?
Basically.
They probably built it better than our apartment, honestly.
Honestly.
Yeah. But basically, one bad storm and they're, like, rebuilding all their homes. It's just a really sad situation.
Sad.
But a lot of good soccer players come out of there.
That's honestly very true.
Yep.
Like, a lot of very famous soccer players were born and raised in favelas.
It's very similar to, like,
Ronaldinho.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. I couldn't speak to that.
I think so.
But it's very similar to in the U.S. There's a lot of people who come from very low income, you know, and ghetto areas.
Yeah.
I don't know if ghetto is a offensive term, but that's still very.
But I think you're saying that's what the word translates to, that they call it there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, in the U.S., a lot of people, that's, like, their way out of that is through the sports.
Yeah, and Ronaldinho was born in favela. Okay.
Very interesting. Okay, so going on to the case specifically, we talked about how he had immunity because he was a member of parliament.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wait, what? Because that seems so foreign to me.
Yeah.
Because in the U.S., I looked it up, members of Congress and the Senate, they have immunity for anything they say in the chamber floors, but if they were to commit a crime of any kind, they can still be tried for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, whether or not they get caught, and you know, it's a different story. But in Brazil, the rule, I'm literally going to read this. This is straight from Wikipedia, as we know is very accurate, and I don't want anyone coming at me. It has been proven to be just as accurate as the Encyclopedia Britannica. Anyways, the 1988 Brazilian Constitution grants parliamentary immunity to members of both the Chamber of Deputies and the Senate. Unlike other countries, Brazilian parliamentary immunity is also extended to crimes committed outside a parliamentarian's official duties, such as murder, theft, etc. This
crap
does not apply for crimes committed before the member takes office. Members of parliament can be arrested only for crimes if caught at the time of the criminal act for a crime with no possibility of bail. These arrests can be overruled by a floor vote of the particular chamber that the parliamentarian belongs to.
That is insane. The fact that you're literally saying if you're, like, in this government and you commit murder and you, like, they don't actually catch you in the act, like, you're good. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't really understand the logic behind it.
There is none. There's no logic in Brazil.
Okay, the logic is the same reason why we have statutory limitations on, like, rape and stuff. It's protecting powerful people.
It's so insane to me.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty crazy. That's one of the main reasons why he was never really, as you said, arrested for anything, just because he couldn't be.
Well, he got impeached, but then he died.
Yeah, after the fact.
Exactly.
He could have been arrested, but
dead.
Anyways, you mentioned, I don't know how you pronounce it. You probably pronounce it baklava.
I don't know what that is.
It's just a ski mask.
I don't know. What is that word from?
I don't know, but it's called balaclava.
Balaclava.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I also found this one. Is this, do I still have it open? I Googled balaclavas.
I did too.
And they're selling one. Oh shoot, where is it? Dang it, I lost
selling
it.
Selling one?
Like on Google, you can buy one. It was yellow with like anime style like
ski masks.
Ears. It was kind of weird. It's like it's probably using some.
And
weird.
You bought it, right?
Yeah, I bought it for fun stuff.
Oh no.
And last thing I was going to, you mentioned Night Stalker. Did you mean Nightcrawler?
Yes.
Movie? Okay.
And I said that like 20 times and I literally was like, I feel like that's wrong.
Yeah, Nightcrawler. Amazing movie. Didn't win any Oscars, which is total BS
yeah.
in my opinion.
Yeah, it was really good.
Was only nominated for original screenplay. Should have been nominated.
I really
for
hope that listeners have waited till this because they were probably screaming like, it's not Night Stalker.
Yeah. Have you watched that movie?
No, I honestly thought you were talking about Night Stalker, the documentary about what's his face.
Yeah. That's why it was on my mind, just because I recently watched it. But yes, it's Nightcrawler.
I started Nightcrawler thinking it was going to be an X-Men spinoff.
Okay.
And I was pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
I was like, this has nothing to do with X-Men.
Wait, what is Nightcrawler about?
It's this.
Oh.
Not... It's not this story,
but
it's
like the concept.
It's about people who show up to crime scenes and get crime scene footage.
Oh.
Sell it to the news.
And they sell it to the news.
But
and
he's
it's
the
guy.
Same way, so he'll like zoom in on like bloody gutty.
But don't say anything else because it's such
yeah,
a good movie. You have to
watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, watch
it.
And you'll be like.
Okay,
like
yes.
This.
So here's the thing.
This is
I don't
not
usually.
Your type
I know.
Of
I don't usually like.
It's kind
crime
of slow burn, though.
But it's not like. It's not like scary in the way I don't like movies. It's very interesting because it's about this dude. Like it's crazy. You just gotta watch it. Super
interesting.
Good. Interesting. Jake Gyllenhaal is amazing in the movie.
Oh, he's in that.
Yeah, he's the lead.
Ah.
Super good. Do I got anything else? No, I ain't got nothing.
Cool. Well.
Good job.
That's our show.
See you next week, guys.
Bye.